This is HPR episode 2758 entitled Haskell Data Types and Database Actions. It is hosted by Tuku Toroto and is about 43 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is: brief summary of how to declare your own data types in Haskell and how to store data in database.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, listeners. This is Tuturto, and you are listening to Hacker Public Radio. Today I'm going to have a short episode about data and data types and databases in Haskell. I probably skipped over some basics when I started doing a series about Haskell game programming, but better late than never, so I'm going to go through over the data. Two things that I'm covering in this episode: data types, and very briefly, and persistent library, and that even more briefly. So the data in the beginning has nothing to do with the databases. It's just about how you declare data types in Haskell. So data types are declared with the data keyword, and the simplest data type that I can think of can be declared as a data, simple, with a simple as a uppercase, first letter is uppercase, equals one, again the first letter is uppercase. So data, simple, equals one. This is the simplest data type. It declares a data type called simple that has just a single value, one, nothing else. You can use that by saying that my value equals one. And now the my value has a type of simple, and its value is one. But this isn't particularly interesting. So if you want to have a more complex data type, you can declare it as a data color equals red, five character, that straight line pipe, green, pipe, blue. This declares a data type color that has three possible values, red, green, blue. And with this one, you can say things like declaring in a code, you can say that color of grass equals green, or color of my car equals blue. So this color data type can have three possible values. It's like a enumeration in many other programming languages. Okay, so you can have multiple values that are alternatives, like alternative values for the data type. The third type is a data payment equals cash double, or pipe character I owe you text. So this one declares a data type payment that has two values. One is cash that takes an additional parameter double, or it has a value I owe you that takes additional parameter of text. So with this one, you can say things like, for example, when you're doing a payment software, you can say that customer payment equals cash 500, meaning the customer paid 500, or car payment equals I owe you quotation mark, I pay back you later quotation mark. So you can have a data type that which value contains some extra. So you can attach more information. It's not anymore just a simple enumeration. This one has two value constructors, cash and IOU, and both of them take one parameter. Cash takes a tuple, and the IOU takes a text. So now that we got into the attaching more data, we can also do something called parameterized data types. These types are even more powerful. One typical example is one that declares that some data or information might or might not be present. And it is declared as a data, maybe R is this time a lowercase, equals nothing, pipe, just A. So this declares a data type maybe that is parameterized with A. A can be anything in this case. It has two value constructors. First one is nothing, signifying that there is no data present. And the second one is just A, meaning that there's a value constructor just that takes a parameter A. And A can be anything, but A here is something you have to declare the A when you're programming. So if you are, for example, if you're doing accounting software or cash payment software where payment might or mightn't be present, you can declare that customer payment type is a maybe payment, meaning that it can be nothing if payment hasn't been received, or it can be just cash double, for example, just cash 500, or just cash IOU, I pay back later. So you can start building a more complex hierarchies. And when you are dealing in the code with this data, the Haskell, and you are, for example, you are checking that you are writing a case statement, which is written in a form of case customer payment of, and then on the next line nothing, arrow to the right, handling for the case that the payment hasn't been received, and then on the next line just X, for example, the X isn't important, it just takes the value inside of the just, and then the arrow and the handling of that case that the payment has been received. So you can start doing things like where you have, depending on the which value constructor has been used, you can have different type of handling in the program. And if you happen to forgot to handle one value constructor, somebody maybe adds a new value constructor in the data type, the Haskell compiler will emit a warning that you haven't handled all the cases here. There's a case missing here. And then you should go and fix those places. Okay, so this way of doing the data types is good when you have only small amount of fields. But if you have more data to carry in your code, for example, you have a person, you wouldn't want to try to remember if the seventh or eighth field, the age of the person, that gets too error prone. So in that case, you can use records, which are declared with the data keyword again. So to declare a simple short record, you can do like data person equals person, curly bracket, person name, double colon, text, comma, person age, double colon, age, curly bracket close. This declares a data type person that has a single value constructor, also called person, and that the record has two fields, person name, that is a type of text, and person age, that is type of age. So now when you're dealing with the code with a person, you can just say you can just say person name space your variable, for example customer, and that will give you the name of that customer. And you, when you are constructing instances of the person, or you can still say, for example, me equals person, then the Tuukka in a quotation marks and 37 as a age. So you don't have to specify the fields where you are assigning the values, but if you want, you can also say that me equals person, curly bracket person name equals Tuukka in quotation marks, comma, person age equals 37, and curly bracket. This way you, when you are creating a person, it's easier to keep track of in which field the data goes into. And sometimes you want to have a, for example, in this case we had an age type. Sometimes you really wish to have a simple data type that has nothing fancy, and that is basically something that looks like something that already exists, but you want to make sure that you are not mixing data types. For example, I could have a shoe size in the person record and age in a person record. Both could be integers, and it would be easy to mix them because integer in itself doesn't know what it is. So we can declare a new type that is a record of one field, and that is declared as a new type, age equals curly bracket get age double colon int curly bracket. So this declares a age record that has only one field, get age. So when you have a, for example, age value, you have to, and you want to use the underlying integer, you have to call the get age to get that outside. The advantage here is that it makes sure that you don't mix the shoe size and age with each other, and then compiler knows that this new type only has a one field. It can only have one field. It doesn't compile otherwise. But the compiler knows that this is a new type, so it replaces the age with int actually during the compile time. So there isn't any overhead. It gives you a tiny performance boost. Okay, so now that we have some data types, we can do something with them, but for example, we cannot compare if two persons are same, because there isn't functions for that. We cannot print them on the screen. So we would have to define those methods by hand, and some of the common functions can be derived automatically. We can just at the end of the data type declaration write deriving, and then the regular parents show comma read comma equal close parent. So this means that now the payment is an instance of show read and equal. So what means that you can print it on the screen, you can, if you have a correctly formatted string, you can turn that into the payment, and you can compare two payments if those are equal. There's some other functions that you can automatically derive, but not going to go through them now. They are not important for understanding what we are talking about now. So this is how you declare data types in the Haskell. These are the bread and butter. And if you want to start working with the databases, especially in the, I'm talking about the, from the point of view of ESORT, because that's basically the only thing I have been working with in Haskell. I have been doing very little of anything else. So from now on, it's all about ESORT and the database library persistent used by the ESORT. So the database is defined in the models file. It's called, it usually resides in the directory config, and it's called models. It is read at the compile time, and it is used to generate data types. So if you declare a table in the models file, the compile time Haskell creates you a data type that is named same as that database table. So if you have the migrations turned on, like I have in the development environment, when the program starts, the program that you just compiled, it will automatically try and update the database. So if new tables have been created, it will create them for you. If you have modified the existing table, it will try to update the schema of the database. If you are just adding new columns, it will work usually, and if you're doing anything more complex, it usually will not work, and then you have to do it manually. So for example, if we were to, these examples are lifted from the game that I've been talking about, so to declare a star system, we just write in that models file star system, and with separate lines underneath that, name, text, code x int, code y int, deriving, so read ego. So this defines star system record that has three fields: star system name, type of text, star system code x, type of int, star system code y, which is type of int 2. It's the derived data types always contain the name of the table and then the name of the field appended together. And when the persistent creates a database table, it is *_system and has fields name, code_x, code_y with correct data types. And if you want to have a foreign, of course it has also the ID column, that is the primary key of that table. If you want to have a foreign keys to referring to another tables, you can do it like, for example, for the star. We have a definition of star, name, text, star system ID, star system ID, spectral type, luminosity class, deriving, show, read, ego. So this will define a table star and also the data type star. And it has the star system ID field. In a database, it's a *_system_ID, and in the code is a *star_system_ID. And in the database, its type is, at least in the case of SQLite, I think it's an integer. And in the code, its type is key star system. And this creates a foreign key relationship from the star to the star system. So whenever you have a star, it has to have a link to our existing star system, and that link has to be valid. It also, we also defined our two fields, spectral type and luminosity class, which are like respectively type of spectral type and luminosity class. And yes, of course, our persistent, sorry, doesn't know what in Earth spectral type is, so we have to tell it. And we do that by defining just a regular data type in a code, data spectral type equals O, pipe B, pipe A, pipe F, pipe G, pipe K, pipe M, pipe L, pipe D, deriving show read EQ. So now we have a regular data type, spectral type, that can have one letter value that I just listed, telling the spectral types of the stars. But persistent doesn't know how to store this into the database, so we have to use template Haskell and add one more line into the code reading derive persist field ?spectral type ?. This during the compile time will instruct the compiler to derive some additional code that I actually don't know exactly what. That will make sure that when you are trying to save a spectral type in a database in a column, it will first turn it into the string and then store it into the database. So our spectral type column in the database is type of, I think it's a varchar. And when you are reading the star entity from the database, it will take that spectral type string and convert that into the spectral type value. And of course, if you have something incorrect there, for example, hello world, then the reading will fail, and the program might even crash at that point. I'm not 100% sure. It's been a while since I did that. Oh, it emits an error. I think it will crash. I should try that out at some point. And the luminosity class is declared in the same way. So you have a data, luminosity class equals IAP, pipe IA, pipe IAB, pipe IB, pipe Roman numeral 2, pipe Roman numeral 3, and so on. And deriving show read EQ and derive persist field, ?luminosity class. So now you can store the luminosity class into the database. And you can store pretty big and complex data like this into a single column, but the problem is that it's stored as a string. So if you want to search into that data, it's going to be slow. So I usually try to break the things, at least the fields that I'm suspecting that I'm going to search by, I'm trying to break those into the regular columns. Okay, and the last one example is a planet that is in the model file, defined as a planet, name, text, position, int, star system ID, star system ID, this is just a foreign key again, owner ID, faction ID, maybe, gravity double, system position, star system ID position, and deriving show read EQ. So this owner ID, faction ID, maybe, line, defines that there's a column owner_ID that is type of int, I believe, and that does not have a not null constraint. So this column in a database can be so this field in a database can be empty. All the other fields has to be present. So planet has to have a name. It has a not null constraint in the database. And in the code, the planet owner ID field in the record is type of maybe faction ID. And this maybe is the one that I talked earlier. So it has two possible values, nothing and maybe key faction. So it can be empty or it can contain the key of a faction. And then there was another interesting line, the system position, star system ID position. This in the instructs the persistent that you want to create a unique index system position that has that is on columns star underscore system underscore ID and position. So this means that planet that this means that for any given star there can be only one planet at any given position. So you cannot have Earth and Mars colliding by accidentally assigning them into the same position in the star system. So if you want to use this stuff in the code, for example, we want to create a solar system, we can define a function, create solar system, equals do, and then on a separate line, system ID, arrow to the left, insert, dollar, star system, quotation mark solar system, quotation mark 00. So this will, in a code, will tell persistent that I want to insert into database this star system record that has a name of solar, that has name solar system and coordinates 00, so it's in the origo. And you don't have to tell persistent where to save it because it knows that it's a star system. I mean, it's a type of star system, so it has to go into the star system table. And then you can say, and it will return a key star system. So it returns you the primary key of that record you just inserted, and that you are saving in the system ID. And then you, in the same, you can say star ID, arrow to the left, insert, dollar, star, quotation mark, sol, quotation mark, system ID. This is the system ID that you got back on the previous insert, G and V. So we are telling that the spectral, the type of the star is a GV. We are not storing the magnitude of the star in the database, apparently. And again, you are getting a star ID, which is of type key star. And then to final step is planet ID, arrow to the left, insert, dollar, planet, quotation mark, terra, quotation mark, 3, system ID, nothing, 1.0. So planet Earth is located in a solar system. It's on a position 3, has a gravity of 1.0 g, and has no owner currently. Thus, it has a nothing there. And to return all the data that we, all these three keys that we created, we are just writing return parents system ID, comma star ID, comma planet ID, close parents. So when you're calling the create solar system function, it will create, it will insert the, these three rows into the, these three entities in the database, and it will return the IDs for those rows that you inserted. And to call this one, you have to use the runDB function. So in somewhere else you can say that res arrow to the left. Res is just a name of a variable where you want to store the result of this function. So res arrow to the left, runDB dollar create solar system. You can actually emit the dollar there if you want. And this will start the transaction, create the solar system, and commit the transaction. And you can have really complicated queries you can mix insert updates, the deletes, whatnot, and can have multiple functions being called and everything. But at the top level where you want to start the transaction, you have to have that run DB. The dollar that is in some of those places, for example, system ID, arrow left, insert dollar star system, solar system 00, that dollar there is a, I don't remember its correct name, but basically what it does, if we were to omit it, we would be calling insert function with the parameters star system, solar system string as a string, 0 and 0. And insert wouldn't know what to do with all this data. It needs an entity. So we are using dollar there to instruct that first evaluate the right side of this line and then call the insert with the result of that thing. So it will create a star system and then call insert and give that star system that data into that. And then the persistent will insert that record into the database. Or rather, it will insert the star system into the database, creating a record to the row. To know actually what would be the correct way of saying that. But the bottom line is that the star system got saved into the database, and you can later on query it. So, how do we actually query things? E-system is the persistent has quite a lot of functions that you can use. So to load data, there's a select list that takes two lists as a parameter. First one is a information telling how to select. I mean, with criteria, this goes to the where part of the SQL statement being generated. And second list is a where you can order it. For example, where you can order it. So to load all planets we can just write planets arrow to the left, run DB dollar select list bracket planet gravity equals dot 1.0 close bracket open bracket ask planet ed close bracket. So this will load all planets which gravity is exactly 1.0 and order them by the primary key. And if you wanted to load everything from the table, you could just write select list open bracket close bracket open bracket close bracket, like give no parameters, and the persistent would load the content of the whole table. But that will only work if the Haskell can somehow deduce from the surrounding code what type you want to have, because if you're not specifying any search parameters, it cannot deduce from the search parameters what table it should be handling. But if later on you are accessing to some data that is specific to the planet, then it figures out that okay, so you are loading a whole database table, and later on you are treating that as a list of planets, therefore you must be loading a planet table. So the Haskell can figure out quite a lot of about what you want to do without you specifically telling it what you want to do. Usually it works. When it fails, it gives you a really, really funky errors that might be tricky to drill down and solve. So it's advisable to specify types as much as you. Well, in a correct amount, not too much, not too little. I usually specify types of the functions, and that is enough for the Haskell compiler. Okay, if you want to load a single row or single entity, there's a get. So you can just say planet arrow to the left, get planet ID, where the planet ID has to be a ID of a planet you are loading. This does not return a planet, it returns a maybe planet, because if you give an incorrect ID, somebody has deleted the row, it might not be there anymore. So it returns you a maybe planet, and then you have to account the fact that you may or may not have a planet at your disposal when you're dealing with that information. And that's one more thing that I like about the system. It says that, hey, by the way, this, you might or may not have this, so treat this and keep that in mind. Updating is done with update. So, and that takes two parameters. It takes a ID of the row you're updating, and then it takes a list that tells how you're updating. So, for example, if we have a planet called Terra and we want to update it to be called Earth, we can just say update planet ID bracket planet name equals dot quotation Earth quotation close bracket. And that assigns that into planet name Earth in a row where the primary key is the planet ID that we just passed in. And if you have noticed that, for example, when we were comparing things, we were using equals equals dot, and when we were assigning, we were using equals dot. These are just how persistent has defined these functions, because you cannot use regular equals or regular assignment here. So it has defined its own operators, own functions that usually they are the same as you would expect them to be, prevented with a dot. No, appended with a dot. Like, I mean, put to the end with a dot. So regular comparison is a equals equals, and in persistent it's equals equals dot. Assignment is equals, and in persistent assignment is equals dot. That's just persistent way of keeping track. I mean, keeping this separate, the regular assignments and the assignments going in the database. Okay. Deleting is done with a delete function. You can say delete planet ID that deletes single row from the database, or you can use delete where that takes a list of parameters. So you can say delete where open bracket planet gravity greater than dot two close bracket, and this will delete all the planets that has gravity greater than two. And all these you have to remember that in order to run them, you have to use the runDB function, either where you are doing it or at the upper level, depending on where you want your transaction to be. Persistent is really nice database library, in my opinion. I like it a lot. It's easy to use, easy enough to use, and it's pretty straightforward. Like, if you don't know what you are doing, you can often find a way of doing what you... I mean, if you're not 100% sure of how to do some things, I often find that doing the first thing that comes into mind is usually the way that persistent is doing things. So it's sort of consistent. It's pretty limited, however. Like, it cannot do joins, for example. But for that, there's another library called SQLator that can do those, and that can be used at the same time as a persistent. But the problem with the SQLator is that, it doesn't have as nice API as the persistent. It's a pretty complex, and like the power comes with the cost here. The learning curve of SQLator, at least I find it be quite a bit higher. And it's not in the stack. That's the package repository of the Haskell that I'm using. It's not there, so in order to use that, I have to download it directly from the repository. Okay, I hope this gave you an idea how powerful, interesting, fun the data type system in the Haskell is. This is just a really brief introduction into that. One thing, for example, we were just storing doubles text, simple data. Nothing prevents you to storing, for example, functions in the data type. You can easily say that there's, for example, my special data type can contain two different functions, for example. Well, I can actually explain that. Now that I mentioned that, I can explain. You can, for example, say that have to come up with a example. Okay, data handler equals, and then simple open parent int arrow to the right and bool. I think it's boolean. I'm sure. Okay, pipe complex open parent int arrow to the right int arrow to the right int. Okay, what does this define? This is a data type. This is a type handler that has two values. Simple, that is type of int to boolean. So any function that takes a parameter int and produces boolean can be placed here. So you can say my handler equals simple odd. And then that odd is a function that tells if a number is a odd. Or you can say my handler equals complex and then inside parents plus, because plus function is a function that takes two integers and produces integer. It adds them up, obviously. So nothing stops you putting functions into the inside of a data type. Sometimes this is really useful. I mean, often it's extremely useful because you can just pass functions around as a data and give them to another functions, and then they can use them, and you don't have to write complete algorithms or functions in a sense that you don't have to specify all the nitty little critical details. You can give some details from the outside of that function, thus configuring that specific version how it handles things. For example, search algorithms you can use in a way that you give part of the algorithm from the outside, thus changing how the search works. But that going through that would take going through what you can do with this would take long and long and long, because you can do. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure that you can think by yourself where you would want to give function as a parameter to another function. This is one way of doing it. Okay, but like I say, I hope this cleared up how the data types are defined in the Haskell and how you can use a persistent to store data in the database and manipulate it. Okay, talk to you later. Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.